Hey Propagandos, Alec here. Full disclosure, I recorded this episode last week with a German friend of mine, Mirko, and I had hoped to have it edited before the German elections this weekend, but life got in the way, and so the elections happened this weekend, and we already know the results. But the good news is that we kind of knew who was going to win in the election anyway, and this is an episode more about the kind of ill-fated and very funny final months of the Stoplight Coalition, the old government, and it's well worth it just for that. And then we kind of introduce all the parties, talk about recent hijinks with the AfD and Elon Musk, and fill you in on some background for the German parties for people that don't live in Europe or, like, you know, don't follow German politics. It's a ton of fun. Thank you, by the way, to Mirko for helping us out with this one, for recording with me. And yeah, enjoy, guys. Oh, and by the way, rest in piss, Christian Lindner. I'm glad you're out of a job, you fucking dork. So, as an introduction, so Connor's not here this week because we're up early, we're in Euro hours, and we're talking to Mirko, a friend of mine from Germany. I assume we could call him a friend, let's say.
You're allowed to.
I'm allowed. And Mirko has been nice enough for the past year or more, I don't know, to let me in on German politics whenever something funny is happening. And Mirko's been calling me a lot lately because between the falling apart of what's been called the Stoplight Coalition, which was the last government, I suppose the current government, really, right? And
sort of, yeah.
And the upcoming elections, a lot's been happening in Germany. Some of it has to do with Americans, because Elon Musk is an American citizen, I will remind you. and none of it's really good, I have to say. So I suppose, I mean, Mirko, I don't know, to start where we're going to start, you contacted me several months ago and you were laughing because the old government was in a shambles, right? The Stoplight Coalition, which was the SPD, the FDP, and the Greens, right? And so the SPD is nominally the Social Democrats, but I think you've said before that you can kind of imagine them more maybe like the American Democrats, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it has been for the last decades a thing that the Social Democrats and the Christian Conservatives have sort of started to converge in the middle, in the imagined center. And they have done a lot of coalitions together. So. Yeah, well, the thing is that actually true for the Christian Conservatives is another question. But we had Merkel as chancellor. She was on like a moderate conservative on her party. And she's very, and her party wing is very aligned with Obama. Mm-hmm. So that's their great American ideal. And that sort of holds true for the Social Democrats. So traffic light coalition, as we call it, or Ampel, with the reds, the greens, and the yellow. Some people have considered them a progressive coalition because before that we had CDU and Christian Conservatives and SPD coalition, and involving the Greens and like the Liberal Party, like their name is the Liberal Party.
So the SPD's in the driver's seat of this coalition, and in 2021 they basically win the election. They inherit the mantle of the CDU. It's a pretty messy election, as I recall, right?
So the Social Democrats had been in coalition with the Christian Conservatives for the last election, and the one before that. So they were pretty close. The Social Democrats had the problem that people looked like the moderate wing of the CDU was doing all the governing, and their right wing and the SPD are just agreeing with it, and the SPD was really lacking for a profile, and their candidate Scholz is like not very charismatic. He's kind of boring, some people see in him like a competent bureaucrat, someone who's too boring to have big scandals. The big selling point of him.
Yeah, he has scandals. He's like the brown paper bag politician, right? And especially following, right? Because 2021, the last elections was the final retirement of Merkel, she's been the chancellor for almost as long as I've ever been paying attention to German politics, right? Like 16 years or something, she's been the chancellor.
Yeah. And 16 years, yes.
And like the odd thing is she retires, right? This long reign, right? Which is at least from outsiders. I'm not German, right? So especially Poles always considered Merkel like the intelligent, you know, they're always the most intelligent leader in the room, right? A kind of even keeled and level headed, right? Even if this is not necessarily true, right? From the outside, Germany seemed normal, right? Under Merkel.
I mean, I wouldn't say that's necessarily wrong, but that speaks more to the other leaders we are comparing her to.
Yeah, the world degenerating around us as Germany stays on a straight and narrow track.
Like, she is like well articulated, looks normal, a bit boring, but we like that. No scandals, no drama, on point. And looking at the international competition, that looks quite good. And Scholz was positioning him as like the Merkel successor, like continuing her style of government.
Because in a different party, right? Because the CDU itself collapses, right? They can't find really a successor for Merkel. And Scholz rises as another boring German that you could elect, right? Who seems normal enough, you know?
Yeah, she had sort of a favorite successor, but... That's also the thing about the CDU style of leadership. They sort of kill anyone who's a capable successor, or kill their career, I should say. No actual murder involved. But it's Game of Thrones shit. You get rid of your successors so they don't stab you in the back. And if someone comes up, you find them a nice job in Brussels, or you make them the president, who's a figurehead but has no political power, and so you get all ambitious people out of the way so you can reign for long. And like before her, there was Kohl, who was also for 16 years chancellor, and after his chancellorship ended, there was a big fight, and Merkel was like the last person standing, and so she inherited the party. And a few years after that, she wins an election, and we had her. And she had sort of a chosen successor. She tried to implement, but this was a woman who's head of a very minor state and didn't have the backing in the party. And then one of her like loyal men, who was always in the press defending her, and is from Armin Laschet, who's from a very populist state and like has backing in the parties, in the party, was the successor, and he loses the election badly, mostly because we had a flood catastrophe, and politicians were coming there and to hold like a memorial, and he was talking with the president, and while they're not speaking, while someone else was speaking, and someone tells a joke and he starts laughing at a memorial event for flood victims. And like the photos were in the press everywhere, this lost them several percent in the election. The SPD wins, and for the first time we have on the federal level a three-way coalition, in living memory at least. And all the other coalitions had been between two parties, and now you have three. And
I remember hearing about that, and it was really eyebrow raising. And when I heard who was going to be in the government, I was also like, okay. Wait, so let's talk about the other parties, Mirko, because like, so I don't know, we've never spoken about German politics on Propagandos, but I can tell you, me personally, not saying for Connor or Mirko, I'm a Greens hater. I don't like the Greens. I don't like the German Greens. They're fucking annoying. They're barely green at all, right? They seem to be more of a, if you're, Mirko's, by the way, a friend of mine from the Radio Warner community. If you're a part of that community, you already know who the Greens are. You already fucking hate them. If you don't, you know, just know that the Greens are basically more focused on diverting money to German arms manufacturing and kind of foreign meddling than they are in, I don't know, reducing like carbon emissions or whatever in Germany, right? I hate these fuckers.
Well, then I have to defend them a bit, I guess.
It's terrible.
Well, the thing is, they're seen in Germany as a very moralistic party and like the most concerned with human rights. And to make an American comparison, some of them lean very liberal interventionism. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I know you hate that. the thing is, to sort of excuse that for the German context, Germany hadn't enough of a military presence that like something of this actually mattered. Like,
Mirko's saying, you've got to forgive it. We don't have an armed forces anyway. So
yeah, the thing is, it seemed harmless a long time when it was clear that our military couldn't do that stuff anyway. And I don't know, maybe we are going into a territory.
I have to say, I mean, a lot of my Greens hate goes all the way back to when I saw how viscerally they hated nuclear power. And so I'm still stuck on that. Thank you very much. Anybody who doesn't like nuclear is no friend of mine.
Oh, yeah. That's also like internationally not very, very recognized. I would say in the German context, it's not as insane. I mean, it comes from a history that why are people opposed to the Iranian nuclear program? Because everybody expects that one day they're going to use it to build a bomb. Mm. And it has sort of the historical context that like they are in left opposition in the 70s and 80s against like a conservative government that has people that had very well connected some decades earlier to the ruling party then. And like former members of the Wehrmacht in other parties, so it's part of. We think it's better that this country doesn't have it. Then it's part scaremongering about. I mean, it's easy to say if you're a continent away. And I think Germany had sort of the sweet spot at being close to the Chernobyl disaster and high standards for health and safety. Mm. So. Maybe some of the Eastern Bloc countries at that time didn't take like giving warnings to people not to collect mushrooms in the wild, and like this happened for several decades when like depending on winds and whatever you shouldn't harvest mushrooms for, and like another factor is Germany is very densely populated compared to other states. Like we have the US has 4 times the population but 40 times the size or something.
It does make sense. It's
much easier to build them away from people and also to store nuclear waste in a part of the country no one cares about. And this has been like the...
Okay, that's pretty funny.
And like this has been the main problem. The French, like we tried a solution selling nuclear waste to the French, paying them to dispose of it, mm-hmm. and they just threw it in the ocean. And then we had a
wow.
And we had a green government who said, well, that's not actually good and green, and stop
them. And certainly so, not worth us paying them to do.
Yeah.
Well, Mirko, that's the problem. You Germans, you just can't stop asking questions, right? Like, what are you doing with the waste that I'm paying you to dispose of? What method are you using to dispose of it? You don't want to know the answer to that. But no, I mean, my frustration is that, look, if the Germans can't have a serious nuclear program, if the Germans can't find a way to dispose of nuclear waste and keep their nuclear power plants from not exploding, look, then we're screwed. Europe's screwed, right? Then nobody can do it. If the French can do it, I know the Germans can do it.
Yep. No, I don't want to say that their aversion to nuclear power is quite rational, but like there are reasons why they are opposed to it and why it resonates with a lot of people. Also, part of it is how European energy markets work. Like Germany is a net exporter of energy to France. We import base load, which is provided by nuclear power, but at least in the last years, Germany had been a net exporter. And we provide balancing power because of like gas turbines or so that can be used when there's more need for it. And this gets higher prices. So like in the years before we got rid of nuclear power, our power companies were not really interested in getting permits to build new nuclear power plants. Mm. No one was like...
It's all base power, right? Because you have to keep the reactor going all the time. Once you build the reactor, it's free, right? But it's always going to be the cheapest power.
Well, yeah, it depends on the kind of subsidies you'll get. Like a coal power, if you want to run a coal power plant in Germany, you have to provide insurance for it, like in case it blows up or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to do if you're running a nuclear power plant because no insurance is going to cover that anyways.
Because it really might blow up, I suppose. I don't know.
So nuclear power was subsidized, but our energy companies were not really interested in building new power plants. Mm. They were interested in, however, in extending the lifetime of the current ones. And they were saying like, oh, we built them so well, we can run them for another 10 or 20 or 25 years. Don't worry about it. And that would maybe have worked if not the catastrophe in Japan, where the Fukushima plant was hit by a tsunami, and there was a lot of scaremongering. And in the end, it wasn't the Greens. It was the Christian conservatives who said, well, we just said we wanted to extend the lifetime of our nuclear power plants by 20 years or something. And now Japan has a nuclear catastrophe. Maybe we should look to the coming elections.
But yeah, I mean, I guess scaremongering about Fukushima. I mean, what, like tsunamis coming soon to the Baltic? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not completely defending it. It's a bit silly, but yeah, they were looking at the coming state elections. And they were not looking good for the CDU, and the Greens were having a good time saying, well, we were always right that this is dangerous. And so the CDU said, well, there was a Merkel quote. She said, well, our nuclear plants are safe. She said it differently. She said, on such a day, you can't say that nuclear plants are safe. Our nuclear plants are safe. This is like the literal translation of her quote.
You can't say that they're safe, but ours are?
Yeah, because like on the day like the Fukushima plant had a disaster.
Oh, I see. Ours are safe, but they could explode at any moment.
it was contradictory, and like it was purely a cynical move by the CDU to get rid of our nuclear power, and like but the thing is.
Which costs subsidies, and nobody really wants them anyway. And
our power companies were not really interested in building them. Yeah,
and in building them, or presumably upkeeping the old ones. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
And at the same time, like the last Green government, it was the Green government together with the SPD. They had decided on subsidizing renewable energies as our energy strategy. And like at the time before our industry became uncompetitive with the Chinese one, we had a solar power industry, and we still have a wind turbine industry that is going well.
Yeah, Siemens is pretty big in that. This is, by the way, the SPD Greens was Schröder, if you remember him, way back in like the Bush era.
Yeah, like 98 until 2005 or so.
Listeners, look up Mr. Schröder. He's one of the most German guys imaginable. He has the most German face, I think, of any man.
Well, so they put in place like a subsidies program for renewable energy, and like it was looking that in time this would be cheaper than nuclear energy anyways. So the question was how to balance like solar power and wind power, which are like you can't schedule as well when they provide power, and like how you deal with that was like the bigger question and the bigger concern. But it was seen as more independent. Germany has no real place where like there's not local opposition to storing nuclear waste, and we don't have the materials for it. So, like, if we talk importing energy, we would buy it from Russia or Kazakhstan or whatever. Mm. So there were a lot of reasons why people would say...
Which, of course, no self-respecting country would ever buy uranium from Russia. We wouldn't do such a thing ever.
So... there were sort of reasons why you would focus on getting the renewables done and like, okay, we phase out the rest. Let's focus on that. And maybe it wasn't the ideal strategy, but whatever. Mm. The Greens and their energy policies will make a return when we talk about the last government. Then I want to introduce the third party, the FDP, like the Free Democratic Party. They call themselves the liberals, which means market liberal. They're not quite libertarian in the American sense, but they have a clientele that they work for. Like apothecaries, doctors, and hotel owners. Like they are the lower taxes party.
Yeah, but when you said one of their big constituencies is hotel owners, and I was like, what? Oh, it's a real coalition, guys. This is German politics.
I mean, there are also some farmers that are for them. If you like are concerned about property tax or inheritance tax, then they're a party for you. And I mean, for a long time, they have not been that insane as they look now. I mean, I would say still objectionable, but...
because they were basically the junior partner in the Stoplight Coalition, right? They were the smallest of the parties.
Yeah. Okay. But they have been traditionally, like, their preferred partner are the CDU. Mm. And, like, they sort of work together. The CDU is for industry subsidies. The FDP is for lowering taxes on companies and, like...
They work hand in hand, right? Like, give the companies more money and also lower their taxes to not get the money that you're using to subsidize them. Good job, guys.
They are like liberal on like social values. Like, they have some redeeming qualities.
They're kind of the LGBTQ party, right? They have a big wing.
If you are the heirs of a big company and also LGBTQ, then the FDP is the party for you. But no, they are in line with, like, the Greens are the LGBTQ party, like, for real. If you're serious about that, you are Greens or to a lesser extent Die Linke, but the FDP is also solid on these issues. They were against expanding police surveillance at some time, and they have some points that don't make them like batshit insane like libertarians or so. But
it just sounds like corporate libs, basically, right?
Yeah. And in the last years, they have gotten more openly xenophobic. Like their current party head once said that, like, if you're going to the bakery, the problem is, like, you see the people standing in line from you and you don't know if this Indian is, like, the IT programmer we want so bad in this country, or if it's a moocher on our social security system. And, like, he understands that people are, like, conflicted about that. And,
yeah.
Total bullshit.
By the way, we're talking about the chairman of the party, Christian Lindner. Right. And yes. Christian Lindner we'll come back to. But if the viewer Google Christian Lindner, because he looks like in maybe any European movie where there's like an evil banker, perhaps he looks exactly like an evil German banker. Right. Very prim and proper. And he's like, yes, make the order, execute them or something. He's hiring hitmen, you know.
You know, that clip that was taken when he was still in school, he got in on TV when he was 18 years old. He was still in like finishing school, and with a friend of him, he and his friend are seen in wearing suits, carrying briefcases, going out of school, and telling the reporter, yeah, we are forming our own consultancy. Actually, we still have to get the school degree, but it's a waste of time. We want to go into business.
Oh, he's a backpack debate kid in America. You know, he's a roller backpack kid.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A few decades later, he's the head of his party. And he had, I would say, rather well-designed posters because the FDP discovered that black and white photos of you are almost always flattering.
I have to say, Christian Lindner is a handsome-looking guy, right? He's a you know, for European politicians, he looks pretty good-looking.
Yeah. I mean, he... there was 1 or 2 years ago a funny thread on Twitter about what cosmetic surgeries he had done.
Oh, really? He's had some work.
Yeah, he definitely has some veneers, and he had some work done on his hairline.
Oh, good. Hey.
But we have to say, professionally, it's not that obvious.
And I got to say, it looks good. Good job, Mr. Lindner. It's among the better decisions you've made in your life, I should say.
Yeah, I would say, yeah. His consultants should get a raise.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Do you want to talk about the breakdown of the Stoplight Coalition? Because Merz, Schulz and the Stoplight Coalition came to power to some amount of fanfare. I mean, I think there were a lot of people at the time that were a little bit worried about inheriting this, you know, EU in turmoil, because this is post-Brexit, right? And the strong, firm hand of Merkel is finally, you know, going to the retirement home or whatever happened to her. And Schulz is boring, right? And doesn't have an enormous track record. And people were wondering whether he could kind of inherit the mantle. And the answer is, I guess not.
Well, there was one concern at the time. The thing is, the election period before that, we had also there were also attempts to build a three-way coalition. Hmm. Before there was a CDU-SPD coalition, the CDU tried to get the Greens and the FDP to enter a coalition with them. And in the end, Mr. Lindner declined after, like, our press were very giddy for it. This would be very interesting how these three parties work together. And in the end, Mr. Lindner left the negotiations and said it's better to not govern than to govern badly. And he will not be part of that coalition.
I'm sure voters appreciate that. Yeah. we would choose not to be in the government, actually.
Well, I mean, it sort of worked, I guess, yeah. Because he got into the next government. So then they entered the next coalition negotiations, and there was heavy fighting about who gets to get what. And traditionally, there are some positions of power that you fight over. In two-party coalitions, the one party gets the chancellor and one other party gets the foreign ministry. Mm-hmm. For us, it's mostly a prestigious post. If it's serious, the chancellor will make the decisions anyway. But you get to have all the press events with foreign heads of state and, don't raise taxes and become unpopular from that. So it's a good position and also, always something the junior partner in a coalition wants. But now you have two junior partners in the coalition. And they look at the three most important posts that people want to have. It's the chancellorship, which clearly goes to the SPD. We have the foreign ministry and the finance minister. And people were saying, the Greens are stupid if they don't take the finance ministry, because they have a lot of things they want to finance. And giving the finance ministry to another party who can sabotage them on that would be stupid. But the Green Party at the time wanted to do foreign policy and prestige that comes with that. So the Greens took that ministry. And famously, Adam Tooze warned that this would make Christian Lindner the most dangerous man of Europe, because he was in the position now to hold German finance hostage. And this was exactly what he did.
Did Lindner end up being the most dangerous man in Europe?
I mean, It depends on if you count Mr. Putin as a European and whatever. But I would say yes.
To the European Union, that actually might be true in a way, right?
Yes. I think he is more destabilizing to the European Union than Mr. Orban or whatever.
Yeah, whoever. But Baerbock, by the way, the Greens head got the foreign minister position, right? And if you've followed Russia, Ukraine, especially from the European side, you've been seeing a lot of her, right? And she's got some very strong opinions about the future of Europe and who is European and who's going to get to be European and what we should do about that, including using men with guns to determine that.
The thing is, like, she has a big block of haters in the country, and I would say for a good reason, because for like the head of the foreign ministry, she is very clear in her speech and not using the diplomatic tones that you would expect. So at one European meeting, she said Europe is at war with Russia, which was meant figuratively, but as a foreign minister declaring a war, a lot of people have seen that as incompetent. And at the same meeting, the French foreign ministry later added that neither France nor any allies of France are at war at this moment. And
reminder, we are not at war.
I mean, there is a base that sees like Ukraine is part of Europe, and like this is a war against the Ukrainian people that have to flee and suffer from this war, and like you can use emotive and strong words against this, but also I guess people are not accustomed to actually diplomacy, and that some diplomatic conventions are useful.
Which may be the problem of giving it to somebody unseasoned. But hey, you know, I live in the United States, so I really can't judge.
Yeah. So then the coalition got in at the tail end of the COVID pandemic and presided over like the end of the pandemic measures. And so far, it was going well. Like the Greens and the FDP had agreed on ending our ban on weed. So legalization of smoking was getting underway, and like there was a reform of sexual self-identification laws. The social liberal stuff was looking it might get somewhere. And then the war happens, we have an energy crisis, and in the midst of that, the Greens plan an environmental law about heat pumps as a more efficient way to heat your homes. And like very early in coalition negotiations, their early draft gets leaked.
So this is heat pumps as opposed to heating oil, right?
Yeah, fossil mostly fuel. Gas.
Oh, natural
mostly gas.
Okay.
Sometimes oil, yeah.
So this sounds like your version of for Americans, the gas stove debacle, right? Are they banning gas stoves? Is communist Joe Biden banning gas stoves?
Yep. And like they have help from the Springer Presse, which is very right wing. And they take this opportunity to attack the Greens. And it was an early draft, and the Greens were very bad at handling the situation. Like, we have to add that they handled it badly, but they got smeared for an early draft, and polls showed that the majority of German house owners thought, like, if their heating system breaks, they have to buy a heat pump mandated by law, and like this is going to be expensive. And there are some actual things going on here. People were worried their insulation might not be good enough for that to be economical. And also, the country was not ready for heat pumps, and the law at the time was that you needed to be, as a mechanic, to install a heat pump, you need to be trained in heating and cooling systems, because the heat pump can do both, and you need to know the machine that you're installing. And so, like, the mechanics were very overbooked, and stuff was getting expensive, and people were scaremongering that maybe this is costing 10,000, 20,000, 50,000. If our heating system breaks this year, how are we going to afford this?
50,000.
And also, also electricity prices were rising, and the Greens did not a good job of handling this. But the FDP leaked this early draft to make their coalition partners look bad.
By the way, you notice the FDP is in coalition with the Greens, right? They're shitting on the guys that they're in government with.
Mm-hmm. And this is a constant theme going through the 3 years of coalition. The FDP is denying funding for government projects. The Greens had an idea to provide more money to families threatened by poverty or
good like welfare programs, social programs,
and to provide more in like food aid and education opportunities. They wanted initially, I believe it was 12 billion euros, and the FDP said they can maybe get 4 or 3, and in the end I think the law didn't happen at all. So the initiative died. So they were sabotaging the government that they are a part of, and I think they were trying both, like wink wink signaling to their base that like, oh, look at this leftist nonsense government expenditure, we are keeping a lid on that. And also endearing themselves to the CDU for the next coalition. My guess is that what's the plan
to the other Christian kind of center right party.
And then we have the farmers protests. The farmers mostly channeled their anger at the Greens and also at the SPD. The FDP was also not that well liked. Mr. Lindner tried to appear at a farmers' protest and was wooed, but mostly they hate the Greens for green ideology. And
we did an episode about the Polish grain crisis freakout right a while back, but the German version of this, which actually happened kind of. Some of it was overlapping, was, as I understand it, more about fuel subsidies, right?
Yeah, it started that the parties with the FDP in control of the finance ministry, all the parties had to take a balanced budget seriously. And so they had to find money in the budget. Mm-hmm. So they were looking at cutting some subsidies, and farmers were getting subsidized fuel, gasoline, and that was going to be cut.
Which, by the way, listener, is reasonable agricultural policy. I mean, I'm not saying it should be free, but it's not necessarily a bad idea for large agricultural producers like Germany to give up, you know, for the gasoline that you drive on the road with to not be the same cost as the one you fill a tractor with, right? It's not necessarily stupid.
I mean, there are legitimate questions if what the price should be, if that is necessary, if they are getting subsidies in other ways that are enough. I mean, I don't have a strong opinion on the effects of that. I don't really know.
But the farmers did.
the farmers did. But I mean, farmers are against all cuts of their subsidies. And I mean, I understand that. I'm saying they are very enraged about that. They were going to be enraged about this if for good or bad reasons.
Yeah.
And they were. And the thing that's most striking about this, that is actually kind of needless, but for the fixation of a balanced budget. And so, the coalition was shaking up to be like the most disliked, most hated coalition of the last few years, because the farmers hated them, everyone conservative hated them, and inflation and energy prices were like rising, and everyone was feeling that. And regardless of if a Christian conservative government would have done better or worse against that, people are feeling the inflation or are still feeling the inflation. And that doesn't make for good opinions on the current government.
I mean, hilariously, it seems like possibly the worst, not the worst that you could imagine, but one of the worst I've ever seen, right? With like a coalition where everyone can find someone to hate in the coalition, right? On the right and the left, the right is going to despise the Greens. And every time they open their mouth, they're going to, you know, yell about it in the press. Anybody that's, you know, gives the Greens or the SPD credit for, you know, sensible kind of progressive policy is going to hate the FDP for fucking sticking their foot out, right, to trip them every time in the finance minister position with Lindner, every time they try to do something. They're also coming to power at a time that they don't know yet, but is going to be an enormous crisis, right, of Europe. Yep. in the Ukraine-Russia war and the ensuing energy crises. They're set up to be the most disliked coalition of all time.
We have to say that it wasn't only the FDP that was playing some unfair tricks. The Greens thought the Social Democrats abandoned them during the heat pump crisis and like left them for the wolves of the press to eat them. And like,
which I think is kind of true. Scholz did not defend them, really.
No, Scholz was impartial to the fight between his coalition partners.
Yeah, I should say, by the way, another hateable thing is cardboard frontman Scholz, right? Yes. Who like has no affect, does not get passionate about anything, is just kind of there.
Yeah, and I think a problem for him was that people are getting tired of like the boringness that comes with Merkel. The end of her era was there, and the style of politics was maybe like overstaying its welcome. In face of these crises, Merkel was like helped maybe even by the corona pandemic because people saw her and wanted someone responsible and reassuring in charge. And now they wanted someone who can, with the inflation being worse than in the pandemic, and so wanting someone who seems more invested. The Greens and the FDP together attacked the Social Democrats for abandoning Ukraine. And this also went on for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, also very unfair. Our American friends have at times joked about the German arms shipments debates because our guided missiles, and some people said, yeah, like Germany has what, 60 of them in reserve. You don't have the arsenal to supply any of them. But in Germany, that's quite a debate. And like the debate if should be like medium range cruise missiles. And there have been threats from the Russians that missiles that could reach Moscow, if they are delivered, whatever, it will have consequences. Other people have said it's a matter of national security, like to do like what, 5 strikes on Russian depots, we are going to give them a full view of our missile capabilities. That's not really worth it. But also, every weapon shipment the Ukrainians or our press requested and the government said no to was an opportunity for the conservatives in opposition and also the Greens and the FDP in the coalition to attack the Social Democrats for being appeasers. I mean, for me, someone who also follows international press, it was also kind of jarring how diverse from like international conversation the German was, because while Joe Biden was saying like Germany, these are our reliable partners in Europe, the German press was saying, well, the Americans feel abandoned by us and will look for new allies in Europe. And yeah, okay, is Estonia going to replace the German-American relationship? Like, okay, I mean, it is unserious, but people are feeling morally strongly about it. And
A place for Poland to rise to the occasion. Yes. As the sun sets on Germany, the eagle rises in Poland, the white eagle. Yeah, no. A Polish industrial base soon to be matching Germany's next year, boys. It's happening, okay?
Yes, right after the collapse of China.
Yeah. Okay, so do we want to talk about, there's probably more to say about the breakdown of the Stoplight Coalition, and that at some point, if you don't mind, Mirko, I'd like to do like an introduction for foreign audiences to like the AFD, in your opinion, what they represent politically, like ideologically, like who kind of their backers are, because I think, right, what you're going to say eventually is AFD, not unlike what people would recognize about the United States, maybe a lack of a cohesive left wing has caused a lot of people to kind of look to the AFD for stuff. And then we can go back to Musk, right, in the final. Musk hanging out with the AFD.
Do we want to do AFD before the breakdown of the coalition or after?
Okay, let's keep going with the breakdown.
Okay, so with this, this government being very unpopular and also having very harsh fights about the budget every time it comes up and every time any topic that costs money comes up, people were sort of speculating if that coalition was to break down. And in my opinion, the government was spared that only because they were all polling miserably. The SPD was going to lose seats, the Greens were going to lose seats, and the FDP maybe not even getting into parliament.
So don't call for new elections because we'll all be out of a job.
Yes. At the tail end of the... we have a law. It was passed by the Christian Conservatives and the Social Democrats together, a law that limits the national debt that can be taken. So
and this, this came in this came in fairly recently, right at the end of the of the of the Merkel period.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact year, but yeah, people were thinking they are very smart, having learned from the euro crisis. The SPD thought the Conservatives were could not lower taxes because if they need the money, they can't lower taxes. The CDU thought it will keep the Social Democrats from increasing social spending. So it will at least keep your opponents from what they want to do. Mm. And also conventional wisdom, a balanced budget is a good thing in itself and makes for solid solid economy. So written this into law, and now we have to deal with the problem because people notice there are crises and we need to do something about it. And so,
and you can't spend money, right? You can't increase the budget unless you find cuts somewhere else, right? The national debt, I should say, right?
So the COVID pandemic was declared a state of emergency for this rule to apply. There were provisions for that. That if something comes up, the fiscal year or some measures can be exempted from it.
If there's an emergency, you can increase the debt. But the problem is, they've just made everything an emergency, pretty much, huh?
Yeah. So in the COVID years, every year was an emergency year for fiscal reasons, and then the Ukraine war starts, and military spending gets like also an extraordinary budget.
of course,
because. Yeah, we can send weapons and fiscal aid to keep the Ukrainian government running. We can send them that if we don't have the budget for it. So this a lot of this was a is lot of trickery was done for the budget.
The military spending, as I remember, is actually separate from the national budget, or is it? Was that just a proposal?
They did an. Like additional military budget. The regular military budget is still covered by the normal budget, but there was an extra fund set up for that. And actually, I believe a new government is going to probably take the military budget out of these considerations completely. But
very sensible, of course.
We'll get to speculations later. So yeah, and then the government decided, we can't declare every year an emergency year, but there are still emergency funds left from the COVID years. So we just used them to pay out this year and see about next. And there was a lawsuit against that. And our constitutional rule said, you can't declare every year an emergency year. And
then the law doesn't matter.
Actually, the COVID pandemic is over and you can't use COVID money to spend for arms and say it's because of the COVID emergency. And this led to the biggest budget crisis this coalition had. And also now what's coming into play is the clock is running out. We have 4 years election cycles and they have 3 years spent. So looking forward to the next election and the expectations that maybe someone in this coalition is looking for a jump-off point to explode the coalition and claim credit for it, bringing down the unpopular Scholz regime. And
all of the members are starting to sweat noticeably, right, as they think, maybe I should be the first person out the door, right? Maybe I should be the one that explodes this, and maybe I can keep my job, and I'll throw my other coalition partners under the bus.
And so we have coalition meetings in summer, and they don't really go anywhere. But then there's the summer break, and nothing happens. in politics, people are on vacation, and they come back for the autumn. The debate to pass a budget is coming nearer, and apparently Mr. Lindner and his FDP had threatened at several times to end the coalition and leave the government if Scholz doesn't do what they say. And the last few budgets, Scholz had said, look at your poll numbers. Do we have to have this discussion? And,
Mr. Lindner, which, by the way, the thing he wants to do is rein in the budget and not do any new spending, right? Lindner is,
yes,
is the, you know, Free Democracy Party, what a hilarious name. But these are small government liberals, right? So yes, they want the, every time they come to them with a budget, they say, that's too much money. That's too much money. And by the way, threatening that they're going to end the coalition if the budget rules are not strictly followed. So Scholz points out that that if they're serious about that, they're all going to lose their jobs, especially the guys in the FDP who are polling at like 3% or something. By the way, the German threshold for parliament is 5, right? So they're 2 whole points away from even having a job.
And it accumulates into the big point where the showdown is happening. Like the FDP said that Scholz's proposal was unimaginable. It could, no one in good conscience could agree to that. And like the SPD, like last minute, put together like an amended proposal, a bit watered down, trying to get a compromise, at least getting them a symbolic win. And Lindner said, well, this isn't good enough. And Scholz in this meeting is annoyed. The people that reported on it said that he was out of patience for that. And he said he ignored the objection of Christian Lindner. Mr. Lindner then said, well, if we are going to ahead with this budget proposal, I'm leaving this coalition. And he's ignored in the meeting. A member of his own party continues to argue with the SPD members of the government. And like his own party members ignore his threat to leave the coalition because he has done it like a dozen times already. Oh, even his own party doesn't take it. Threats seriously anymore.
Dude, it's so embarrassing. It's so embarrassing. Like somebody's making a presentation on the budget to the chancellor and you're like, I'm going to leave the coalition, and just nobody's paying attention to you. It's so embarrassing, man.
And so the chancellor wants to respond to a point that another FDP member made. And then Mr. Lindner enters the conversation again and says, hey, I just said something dramatic here. And it is the report that the members of the cabinet started laughing. to which Scholz responded, and Lindner wanted to relitigate the point. And Mr. Scholz said to him, like, we have exchanged enough words. I want to see action.
Oh, that's a real cross the Rubicon moment, huh?
And the meeting is ended shortly after that. And apparently the FDP is serious about this. Mm-hmm. And the chancellor goes out and gives a speech and said, like, he sworn oath to our constitution to keep harm from the people and to keep the country in good shape. And he made this oath, he believes in it, and his conscience now forces him to relieve the Minister of Finance from his duties because leaving him on his post is no longer possible with keeping his boss on the Constitution. It was quite a powerful moment. He loses his government majority. They're now a minority government. And we even have a minister from the FDP that asked the Chancellor, like, can I stay in your government? I'll even end my party membership.
Ooh, so, that's not a good sign, gentlemen. Rats off the ship, boys.
The thing is, I believe that is actually maybe a protest against his own party leadership. Because like going against your own party to remain in unpopular government, I don't think he was saving his career with that. Mm. I think he might be out. But or maybe return to the party once the party leadership changes after the next election. Who knows? But this might be actual dissatisfaction with the party leadership, like trying to extort the chancellor and losing.
When your boss is Christian Lindner, I could see quitting your job out of frustration, right?
Yeah. And then the big drama begins, because the FDP hasn't quite, not all people have gotten the memo if this was on purpose or a stab in the back by the Social Democrats. Mm. So you have FDP people coming out saying the chancellor was just unreasonable and we couldn't agree to it. And then he ended all of this, and other people were saying, yeah, well, the chancellor was irresponsible for so long and this was the final straw. This is all planned. This is our responsibility, our time to be responsible. And then the party insiders like leaked. And I don't know if this was a hostile leak or if they thought it made them look good. But the party had an internal memo preparing to end the coalition and take credit for that, to end the unpopular coalition. And they called it the D-Day papers.
Oh. Cringe. Yeah.
maybe this gives you an insight into the minds of the FDP.
Yeah, they're fucking dorks, man.
Yeah, this is where we were in November or December. It was clear that there had to be a new election soon. We are going to date ourselves now. They are going to be held next week. There was a fight. The conservatives wanted to hold this election before Christmas or maybe at the start of the new year, because they thought nobody else had chance to campaign, and over Christmas no one was paying attention anyways. So an unfair advantage for the conservatives to not allow anyone to have a campaign, and they had been campaigning against the government in opposition for the last 3 years, so big bonus for them. But like in the end, our constitution guarantees like a period of campaigning before an election can be held, so you can't like call it next week. There needs to be time to prepare, and like organizational reasons, lots of fighting was put in about the date, but yeah, it was set. Now we are looking at elections coming soon.
Because the CDU has been riding high on the horse basically almost for the entire period of the coalition. I mean, it seems like the longer the coalition goes on, the more people just want the CDU back.
And the CDU has a real easy job. Inflation, with us, the inflation would be lower. Just trust us. Russia, we hard on Russia. Putin would never dare, whatever, with us. Support for Ukraine, we would send more, everything it takes. No, we are not afraid of an expansion of the war. Criminal migrants, we would deport more of them. You would feel safe. There would be less terror attacks. Government budget, well, we would pay less in social security. To those muchos who don't even work a job. And it is very easy for them, because like unprecedented unpopularity of the government meets biggest opposition party that just can say we would do stuff differently, and that's apparently enough.
Well, so do we want to speculate about the election a little bit?
Maybe we should add the head of the CDU is also a great ape psychopath.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We got to talk about Merz, right? So Merz is...
He was in the race for the leadership of the CDU in the 90s or early 2000s when Merkel won the fight. He was he contended for party leadership and lost to Merkel, and he left politics because of that. He didn't see any chance for him in the Merkel era, and she was ruthless against her opponents in the party.
And she still hates him, kind of, as yes, I understand it.
He has been more of the right wing of the Conservative Party. And I mean, these are all things to bring up, but I believe in the 90s, he was against the law of marital rape. Like, he was of the weak opinion that if you're married, you can't be raped, because, this kind of Christian conservative position he's associated with. And he's also very off-putting. His behavior is disgusting.
He seems like a real freak, I'm not going to lie.
And he used his chance to get into finance. He worked for BlackRock in the interim. And when Merkel was out, he saw his chance to come back. And he tried a bit for the CDU party leadership, and he lost resoundingly. And the CDU people said, well, when stuff gets hard and you lose an election, you run away for 16 mm-hmm. years. Like, we need people that are loyal and actually believe in stuff, and you're only loyal to yourself. We need members of our party team. Fairly enough, I guess. And so he lost. But then when the candidate failed in the election, there was another competition for the party leadership. And through some luck and like being the most known of the candidates and like for a lot of reasons, he succeeded and he has been head of the party since then. And he really is cranked the xenophobia up. We have a terrorist attack. Let's get our, get these Muslim migrants out. You all see that the AfD is a threat to our democracy. Well, if we just deported more migrants, yes, their campaign would be not as strong.
Move to the right. Move to the right so that the far right doesn't win. Right, amounts to me. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Right, seems like a classic center-right or right-wing European guy, right? We love NATO. We want more liberalism in the markets, right? / regulation, but also the EU is good and military spending, right?
I mean, some pundit said he's afraid of Merz becoming the new chancellor because he will sell us out to the Americans because of his transatlantic ideology, and mm-hmm. he will also sell us out to Putin because he's just stupid.
I don't know about the second part, but the first part sounds correct.
So he has been a hardliner against immigration, and mm-hmm. he has been a hardliner against our social security system. yeah, still doing well, and that's
concerning. So let's can we speculate about the election, because the CDU is far and away the most popular party. I've seen that in the past couple months the CDU has ceded some ground to the AfD, which has produced a lot of very concerned op-eds, right?
Yeah,
some stuff has happened basically since November, but CDU is still ahead, but not enough that they're not obviously right to. For American listeners, they don't have a majority, right? And you need a majority to rule. So the CDU is going to have to be in coalition with somebody, right? And probably the most obvious candidate's the SPD. But I don't know if it's Mirko. I don't know if they have the numbers, right? After the lower parties drop out, I don't know if the CDU and SPD on their own are enough to form a coalition.
So it will be very interesting. And depending on the little parties, who gets into parliament and who doesn't. If some of the smaller parties fail, then the CDU has the options of SPD or AfD or perhaps even the Greens, depending on how they're doing. It's not looking really like that, but perhaps. If Linke, FDP, BSW and so on get into parliament, then it's going to be very messy. But yeah, the CDU is going to look, is going to be the strongest party. And probably the AfD will be the second strongest party now. And an astounding feat for the AfD. In the last election, they managed 10%. Now they're looking at 20. There's, I would say, actually a reason to be concerned that they have picked up that much.
And I mean, the race currently, this seems crazy to like Americans, for instance, right? But like the polls, and these are serious polls, right, list 7 different parties in the German parliamentary elections, right? Like 20%, it doesn't sound like a lot, right? You're like, well, it's okay, that's nowhere close to 50. 20% is huge in parliamentary elections that have this many contenders for parliamentary seats. Right. Some of the lower ones, right, are goofball friends at the FDP, Mr. Lindner. Right. No job, sir. Do please return to the to your prior employment. Please go to the unemployment office if you can't find work right away. They're not getting into the parliament, given the numbers that I'm looking at. BSW, which we don't have time to talk about, but maybe Mirko, in a future episode, we'll do the saga of Die Linke and BSW and and Red Brown and all this crap, right? Because it is pretty funny, but it's too much time. BSV, yep, maybe right now is not looking like they're going to meet the threshold. Die Linke, it looks to me above 5.6%. I'm getting all this stuff from the Reuters.
Yep.
Like poll aggregation. And then we got Greens 13, SPD 15, AFD 21, CDU 29, right? So those guys are in for sure, and SPD CDU, right? Not close to 50, right? Not even close to in the mid 40s together.
Yeah, but you have to deduct how do you call it?
You have to take out the percentages of the parties that aren't going to make it because everybody else increases by that much, right? It's annoying that way.
Yeah, and I mean we have sort of 20 parties or so running for every election, but most of them don't have a chance.
Yeah, we don't have time to talk about the Freiwähler. Those guys are really funny, but again, not enough time. They're so funny, dude.
I mean, we should. We have a lot of parties that are cooking and very interesting recipes.
Oh boy. Mirko, can we talk about the elephant in the room? Because even Americans are becoming aware of the specter of far right politics that's taken Europe, of anti-European and anti-migrant. Let's talk about the AfD, right?
Yeah, we start with the history. The AfD began in the wake of the euro crisis. Some very kooky economics professor thought the German exit from the Eurozone might be warranted because all this Euro stuff is going to go end badly. And it morphed into sort of the German Brexit party to enter the European Union. And this wasn't really a recipe for success, but like there was some Euroscepticism. There were right-wing newspapers pushing them by saying we have to pay for Greek retirement funds and pensions and whatever, and getting getting Germany out of the EU would end that. And I would say very stupid on its face. And the AfD had a history of leadership struggles. The first leadership struggle was the founders against the party right wing. And the party right wing lost. The founders lost. The right wing won. This is going to set a model. Every time there's a leadership struggle, the right wing wins in them with them. And so they morph from an anti-Euro party to an exit the EU party. And then 2015, the Syrian civil war and the migrant crisis happened. A million Syrians entered Germany that year. And we have a new topic. No one really is any more concerned about the euro. It's still mm-hmm. there. You can still pay with it. But now there are migrants here in larger numbers than before, and something has to be done. And the AfD is the party. And at the time, Merkel from the Christian Conservatives says, her famous words were, "Wir schaffen das," like, we can do it, claiming that our institutions are strong enough and our society is healthy enough that we can integrate even a million people because we are, 82 million people here. Our state capacity is big enough. And the AfD said, no, our country is too weak to do that, but from a nationalist side. And
I should say, because we have some American listeners, it really can't be overstated how much of a shock the migrant crisis was at the time, right? It was enormously destabilizing to European politics. All these people coming in, they're brown, they're Muslim, right? Like, I don't have to tell many people that Europeans, have opinions about various peoples that are not European looking, right? Those opinions vary somewhat, but they get freaked out when they see a lot of them that they weren't planning on seeing, right? And this is basically a 2 to 3 year period in European politics that is just all fucked up. Right, as a result of the Syrian war.
I mean, at first, even our conservatives were somewhat optimistic about it, which it feels weird to say now, But Merkel really was trying to sell, like, we can manage this. This is no reason to freak out, and maybe we'll come out stronger for it. And this quickly changes when conservative press turns against that. And then there were some, I believe it was on New Year's Eve, there were celebrations and some Arab-looking man assaulted a woman or several women. And then it became the Muslimic rape gangs threatening our beautiful women. And this is the model the AfD uses since. So looking at their posters, having a blonde woman and we will provide security on it is like a standard AfD election poster. And yeah, like the implication is there. These Muslimic men are a danger to our women and our safety.
To your point about the leadership struggles, I remember like Jörg or what his name was, the last AfD guy, right? The kind of mussy hair. He reminded me of Bojo of the British Boris Johnson a little bit, but now like Vidal. Again, right? These stereotypes are so funny. She's like a hot German lady, right? Like, but like Aryan German lady, like bright blue eyes, very blonde hair, very like angular structured face, right? And she's in her like, she wears like pearls all the time, right? So she's like a very prim, proper German woman, right?
Yes.
Serious about Germany and its future.
Well, getting to her, we have several rounds of like the right wing winning out, and then at some point, the current AfD leadership is the one that stabilizes this trend. They are the first one to win the power struggle against the far right of their own party, and that's now the permanent cause they have settled. Mm. Like they, one of their like opposition people were like more open neo-Nazis. And maybe the party isn't ready for that, and maybe the members of the party grasp that maybe that's not good electorally, and they should try some more respectable candidates. So, we have settled on Weidel, and she has gone, I believe, through some sidekicks. One of them retired from age and was a former disgruntled CDU guy. So the AfD had a lot of people from the CDU that didn't like Merkel, and like either because they thought her refugee policy was wrong or because she won a power struggle against them and they want revenge. Mm. So the AfD had a lot of that guys, but like Weidel is more the native AfDer.
And it should be said, by the way, that the AfD does have a lot of policies, at least in theory, right? Because they've never been a part of a ruling government. At least in theory, they are right-wing populists, right? So they're pretty staunchly anti-immigration, right? And, and they've been better, by the way, at kind of crafting their narrative away from, like you say, like the most radioactive far right supporters, right? That some of whom are just like straight up neo-Nazis, right? And towards a more kind of populist vision. And they're definitely not hurt by the fact that, one, the ruling coalitions seem to be tripping over their own dick constantly and just embarrassing themselves. And two, they're on the populism side, there's not a huge success of a kind of populist left movement that you could channel those energies into, right? Like Die Linke's kind of floundering. There was this breakup between Linke and BSW, the Wagenknecht party, and that's not really doing super well. And the AfD in earnest, right, I would say, seem to be possibly the most serious party that's really focused on the kind of, you know, German jobs, German welfare, German, you know, a quality of life, right, style party.
I mean, not to hand it to the AfD, but they have been consistent on message for the last 10 years. The foreigners are the problem, and that's no contradiction there. They every time they remain consistent, and even if they have infighting after the dust settles, they come out strong with the same message they had before. And that cannot be said for our left movement. It is very disunited, fighting about very silly issues and being disunited over issues that should be obvious. been doing a very bad job. And also our media system was really conducive to the AfD, because even if the AfD is not appearing on television, every politician is asked about the migrant situation.
Yeah, can you illustrate this? That like even though AfD is kind of shuttered sometimes out of the discourse, right? People keep talking about them and about their issues, right? So, it's kind of a Trump, like a Trump scenario where like Trump gets talked about or like placed up and then he gets all this free media. AfD's in a way the same.
Yeah. So part of it is like our media is concerned about a far right, possibly aligned with some neo-Nazis, some aligned with far right European populists. And to fight against them, we have to talk about the topics that make them popular. But in doing that, you every time talk about their topics. Mm-hmm. And it no SPD politician can go on TV without being asked, yeah, but how are you handling the border? How are you handling asylum?
They frame the conversations. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. And our media seems too stupid or impotent to find a way out of that. Or maybe they don't want to. I don't know. But and also they've tried several things. When the AfD was not invited to appear on certain television programs, the AfD campaigned on like the mainstream media is against us. One of their party heads was invited to some TV debate, and to add to this, if it's a election TV debate, every party in parliament must be invited. Hmm. Or like you have not to everyone. You sometimes have one-on-ones, but there are provisions. Like you can't shut parties that are in parliament out of public debates that appear on TV, but. Like if it's not related to an election, the AfD pretended a lot of not being invited and being hated by the mainstream media. And then when they appear, they provoke the moderator or like leave the debate in protest. I think that was one of the things Weidel did early on in her career, just being asked about her connections to the far right and saying, like, I won't stand here and be defamed. I'm doing what's good for the country, and I'm not listening to this and leaving the room. And like creating such spectacle, they are fairly good at. And
a lot of showmanship, it sounds like, yeah.
Yes. Mm. And, I mean, my personal belief is that Weidel doesn't really believe in anything. I mean, I can't really prove that, but I would say it might be work well for them that their actual leadership right now is pure cynical opportunist and doing what is popular, and thus not running into ideological constrictions because they are opportunist. And it has been pointed out that the AfD and their head candidate is campaigning on like a traditional family role, the nuclear family with the stay-at-home mom and like the heteronormative couple.
The German version of those 1950s magazine ads or something.
Yes. Mm. And the head of the AfD is a lesbian woman. Her partner is an immigrant from Sri Lanka, I believe. But
yeah. In a way, they literally are doing the kind of multi-culti thing, right? They're like, we're not racist. How could we be racist?
and I believe actually that has helped them because two concerns that they are like very opposed to alternative forms of living. Mm. She can say, no, look at me. I will not put you into concentration camps. I'm living that myself, but I recognize that a nuclear family is very important for the society and it should be encouraged. And yeah.
So AfD's also been in the news because our brainworms of the current American degeneration and brain rot has affected Germany in a way, because our friend Elon Musk, owner of the Everything App X, an X space, I suppose, with Weidel. And then a week or was it last week? He went physically to he phoned in to an AfD meeting, right, and spoke to them about the importance of defending, you know, the German German culture and stuff like this, right?
Around when the coalition was breaking apart, he was leaning in on German politics via his posts, and he called the Chancellor Scholz a fool,
yes,
and an idiot on Twitter, and that led to a very funny exchange when our chancellor was interviewed on TV and he was asked what he responds to that or how he feels about that. And he says, well, it ennobles him that Musk thinks that badly of him.
Okay.
And Mr. Musk said that only the AfD can save Germany from disaster.
Yeah.
And he put up a newspaper editorial that was very clearly AI generated. It has the recognizable. Here's the list of arguments, and we have a headline for the a short summary for my opinion, and then while you may say that, following by points supporting the argument, it reads really AI generated.
That's so disrespectful. Like, he puts an op-ed in the German press, and then it's just like, have ChatGPT write it for me. He can't even be asked to do it on his own. Yeah.
Yeah. And he said the country needs deregulation and less migrants. And I don't know what the other point was. Some sort of drivel. It caused a bit of outrage because of, like, the low standards and also, like, obvious foreign interference in an election and, like, an oligarch weighing in. And some people, like, it is a conservative newspaper, one that tried to push the FDP in the past. Some people resigned. Some people from the newspaper signed a letter of protest. But I would say both is a bit hypocritical because you can look at what the paper publishes and it's not an anti-capitalist oligarch paper.
It's not exactly a leftist zine, you know. Germany's pretty serious about one. They're serious about elections, right? I mean, the electioneering period is pretty serious. Another thing we don't have time to go into is the hilarious government poll packet that you get sent to, like, identify what party you're a part of, right? Like, that's very funny that you guys do that. But also, I mean, this is just clearly, right, like, a foreign billionaire and maybe part of the U.S. state just coming in and saying, this party is the only one that can afford Germany a future, right? While he ransacks the American government.
And in his Twitter space with Weidel, I think that might actually not be stupidity on their points, but, like, knowing how what stokes attention in Germany, they said that Hitler was a leftist and therefore you need to vote right-wing parties.
Yeah. It hurts. Hurts people.
It is very recognizable that you're if someone says that they're an idiot. Look at where some very well-known German companies got their money from. The Nazis were very keen on privatizing and granting their benefactors in the economy, their donors in the economy, granting them free labor that they don't ask where they have it from.
And by the way, having party apparatchiks kind of administer also, like, businesses, right? Like, having these, like, Politburo guys that help run, like, these big organizations. So, I guess I'm more talking about the United States than I am about Germany, Merkel, at the moment. So, forgive me.
But bringing industry interests into the government it is easy rage bait in Germany to talk about the Nazi Party and your relationship to it or what you think of them. And Elon Musk and Weidel played it perfectly. The Nazis are leftists. You hear it from Mr. Musk. Meanwhile, there's a pathetic little appendage. Mr. Lindner is desperate because he thinks he should be the one endorsed by Musk. And he tweeted at Mr. Musk. No, I can't spare you the pain. He tweeted at Mr. Musk that, please, Mr. Musk, consider who you are endorsing. I am also for deregulation.
That's great.
His difference to the AfD is that there are some very well-educated special experts that want to migrate to other countries. And it wouldn't be good for the economy to hinder these people and Indian IT experts coming here or whatever's meant by that image. But the AfD's xenophobia is bad for the economy, and actually our industry elites think that our industry lobby has said that they fear an AfD victory might hurt the German economy. Mr. Lindner says he is for secure borders and like being the right amount of xenophobia that it doesn't hurt economic growth. And Mr. Musk should endorse him for that. And it is obviously very pathetic.
The most cocked man in Europe. I mean, Lindner is like so embarrassing, man. I mean, every time I hear about him, I'm just like, oh, God, dude, just crawl under a rock and don't come out, you know? How, if you know shame, sir, how can you show your face in public, you know?
Yeah, the FDP is clearly failing their goal of reaching 5%, and they're flailing around. They have floated the idea of buying some crypto currencies as reserve and trying to gain the Bitcoin vote. And like,
man, they really do want Musk. They're trying really hard to be like the Musk party, but no, his mind is elsewhere, unfortunately. I should say, by the way, breaking news, Vance, I'm sure you know Mirko, but for our audience, JD Vance, the vice president of the United States, has now met with Vidal, right? And he took a visit to Munich on Friday, and he met and he said, I think the German other parties are overreacting to to the, you know, the AfD's stated ideology, let's say.
I mean, I'm not quite sure if that's a good comparison because I don't know much about American context, but what I know, Vance and the AfD, that seems like a really good match.
Oh yeah.
This forgotten heartland, but I can make it.
Well, except, I mean, not to give the AfD credit, but I don't know how they would govern, but their messaging when it comes to at least the Germans, right, is quite a bit more populist than even like a pretender like Vance, right? And certainly the rest of the Republican Party. I don't know if they can be trusted, but I'm just saying that seems different to me.
I mean, just to give you seeing the posters that parties put up, I have to give you some gems I saw yesterday. On one lamp post, there was an AfD poster, and it said, "Stop building wind energy."
Okay.
And on the net, and like one lantern post past that, it was AfD affordable energy prices.
Okay. Well, hey, you know what? Just say whatever, Mirko. People, this is the new age of politics. I mean, I'm living in the United States, and I can tell you this is true. You just say a bunch of stuff, and people remember what they want to remember.
I mean, the AfD is campaigning that ending subsidies for renewable energies will make energy cheaper. And they are very clearly campaigning against the woke mainstream and, like, against mainstream media. It is eerily American in some ways.
Yeah.
But they also have their European ideals. Mm. Like some of the AfD have come out and said that Viktor Orban from Hungary is a great statesman who does a lot of things right. So that is the path they deem good. And yeah.
Not that we have a lot of Polish listeners, but Polish listeners will recognize right this kind of right-wing sentiment in large parties. The Prawo I Sprawiedliwość, Peace, the Law and Justice Party in Poland, long got along with Mr. Orban and had very nice things to say about him. Well, so Mirko, is there anything else? I don't know how the Germans, by the way, are going to deal with the American vice president basically making statements to the effect of, you know, his favorability to one party over the other. It's pretty awkward, man. It's not good.
I have seen that they are very uncomfortable with the statements he made at a Munich security conference, where he said that, he doesn't care through what intermediary goals the Europeans get to up military spending if they if they are going to 3% first or to 4% first as their intermediate goal. But what's important is that by the end of his term, they meet the Trump goal of 5%. I mean, even our most hawks are demanding 3% or whatever. Like the Europeans are not going to spend more on military than the US or something.
Yeah, oh, come on, man.
this is not going to happen then, whatever. But also, he said that while the American president is and the Oval Office is very concerned about the Europeans not meeting their defense goals, actually the biggest threat is not Russia or foreign threats, but the internal threats of the migrants here. And saying this as a sort of, it is not a NATO conference.
Yeah, is that business for NATO or that? I don't know.
And he's there to promote NATO and American military interests, and he's saying, well, get the migrants out. That's the most important thing.
Spend on your military police.
and the thing is, it is really crazy that I don't know if that's part of his strategy or if he's dumb or whatever, but like he was speaking to the most Americaphile people in Europe. Like they want to be liked by the Americans and they want the best relationship. Like they want to be loyal vassals to NATO.
A lot of hesitant head nodding in that crowd, probably. Yeah, or maybe not so hesitant. I don't know. You know.
No, it didn't really go over well because like our political elites don't like the interference in the internal stuff, except for the AfD, but the rest think that's not good, and also they see that Trump wants sort of to cut a deal with the Russians and not consult the Europeans on that, and that's not how they imagined things going.
And rarely, to be honest, is European chauvinism so out in the open, right? It really does make a lot of Europeans feel very uncomfortable whenever you say this stuff kind of out loud, you know?
Yeah.
Or that's been my experience. But let's say I haven't lived in Europe in a long time, Mirko. things may have changed.
I mean, it is also, they are confronted with what they said for the last 3 years and now the reality of things. This war is not a proxy war, and if you say that word, you are a Kremlin asset, was the line for the last 2 years, and now the Americans are deciding what peace can be had and what not, sort of recontextualize a lot of statements that you don't want to be recontextualized.
Exactly. Yeah.
Then all this talk, the Europeans said we were going to make a path for Ukraine to join the EU, and like the NATO guy, Stoltenberg, I believe, was it, promised that NATO membership was in the future, and now the Americans are saying...
I mean, it seems hilarious now. Yeah. I mean, Trump is openly talking about having peace talks that don't include any representation from Ukraine, right? And it's like, but this is not a proxy war. And that's a very dangerous kind of expression to be using when discussing Russia-Ukraine. It's like, oh, man. Like, who are we kidding? And it's unfortunate. I have to be honest, right? Like, this is just me looking in, Mirko. I'm not a German, right? But I am, technically, I'm a European, right? Like, the AfD being really the only party that, you know, let's say is more tentative about supporting, right, this kind of a war on the periphery of Europe, right, with what used to be a strategic energy partner that's mostly being pushed by the United States, right? The fact that AfD, as far as I'm understand, you've told me, right, is the only party running on, for instance, rebuilding Nord Stream and trying to rebuild the energy market that existed before it exploded, right? Like, that's deeply concerning, right? If these guys are monopolizing, right, the space for what I believe are kind of more sensible policies, or at least shouldn't be foreclosed on from the fore, right? That's not good for Europe. It's not good for Germany, but it's definitely not good for Europe.
Yeah, I think talk about if pipelines should be rebuilt, if that's economical even, or whatever. It is in polite society, this will not be accepted before there's a ceasefire. And everything you do before that, There's way as like the split off of Die Linke was sort of also campaigning on that the energy trade should continue, but the polite mainstream is not accepting this discussion, and the AfD has maybe one people that think this is going to keep energy prices lower, and I'm not qualified to judge that. I don't know what building a pipeline costs and how long it takes, but.
Okay. Well, Mirko, it was a real pleasure to have you on. I'm going to try and have this edited before the elections actually happen, because otherwise this episode is going to seem a little bit silly. But there's actually a lot more to, as I said, there's a lot more to talk about maybe another time about German politics. And when funny things happen, I'd love to have you on again. It's a delight.
Sure.
Okay, brother. Yeah. Well, best of luck to you and to the good countries of Central Europe, to the nation of Germany, to my Deutsche friends, right, who I used to look at as the most sensible of all Europeans, and unfortunately now I think I know better. Another time we'll have a conversation with Mirko about how high up on a pedestal Germany was in my mind as like an adolescent. They were really like what it meant to be European. What it meant to be a sensible nation, and let's just say a lot of it might have been propaganda, or or it was just how bad stuff was in America and Poland. You know,
well,
we're going back. CDU's winning. We're going back. We're gonna find a new Merkel to enchant young impressionable libs right around the world.
You have to go back to reading The Economist, or what was it?
Yeah, oh no, don't remind me. Don't tell them that, man. I'm not cutting it. He's right, I did. Oh man, I used to glaze up, Merkel. All right, so we don't have Connor here, but I can say the outro. Christ, what is it? Excelsior, propagandos, and keep your eyes on the skies. Ta-ta for now, guys. Bye-bye.
See you.